Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Well, first of all, just welcome to all of you, because we know how your time is very precious, and we know how challenging parenting can be. So we want to just welcome you and thank you for taking time out of your evening or your day to join us tonight on this teleseminar. So that's tonight in UK time, in English time. We'd like to support your work in parenting, and we hope to give you some ideas today that you can use at home with your family. So there are about 300 parents registered for today's call, and I don't want to start without everyone here. So I'm going to talk for just a few minutes about Hand in Hand while everyone is joining in. And after that, we'll begin the 10th teleseminar on the topic of aggression. So as I think you may have heard, my name is Anna Cole, and my co-presenter today is Shaheen Murali. So I'm just going to give you some background about Hand in Hand while we're waiting for everyone to get on the call. Hand in Hand is a non-profit organization based in California, and it has certified instructors all around the world, including myself, Anna, and my co-presenter, Shaheen, here in England. Hand in Hand was founded about 30 years ago by Patty Wichler, who has a number of game-changing insights about the emotional needs of children based on many years of real-life experience working with children, raising children, being a grandparent. Hand in Hand brings parents information, tools, and lots of support for the vital work of parenting. We know that the work of nurturing children cannot easily be done in isolation. Hand in Hand has a variety of offerings designed to support you. Free articles on the website, free teleseminars like this one, a free online discussion group, and free access to an inspiring blog with many parents' success stories based on this approach. Besides the free resources, Hand in Hand offers podcasts, classes, and support groups, both in person and online. Intensive training for parents and professionals are offered, and consultations for one-on-one support. So these are all available. You can find all these resources through the Hand in Hand website. So Hand in Hand's approach in all of these offerings is called Parenting by Connection. So Hand in Hand is the organization, and they teach an approach which is called Parenting by Connection. And there are four main ideas behind this approach. And so the first one is that we parents need and deserve support for the emotional challenge of parenting. And we can build that support and have much more success meeting both our own needs and our children's needs. Secondly, our children are born to feel connected to us. This sense of connection is what they need in order to learn and to build friendships and to build resilience and confidence as they grow. Thirdly, when children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track and they signal to us for help. And as we'll be discussing today, they don't always signal for help in ways that are very acceptable or easy for us to, you know, to appreciate that they're signaling for help. And fourthly, when we foster laughter and play without tickling, when we set limits without harshness and support children to have good, hearty cries and tantrums, it helps our children feel more fully connected to us. And it helps them leave difficult behaviors behind. So Hand in Hand helps parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection so we can feel successful as we love our children, and so our children can thrive on the love we have for them. So that's a brief intro to Hand in Hand. That's a short introduction to Hand in Hand parenting. And now I'd like to just quickly introduce myself. And I'll ask my co-presenter, Shaheen, to also introduce herself. So, firstly, just to let you know, I have two children. I have a daughter who's now 11 and a son who is 9. It's amazing. Every time I say that, I can't quite believe how big they got. I've been practicing the hand-in-hand listening tools, some of which we'll talk about today or this evening, with my own kids. My son was around 3 months old. I came across hand-in-hand, and I'd say by the time he was 6 months old, I was starting to put these tools into practice. We live in a town called Lewes, about 15 minutes from Brighton in England. So for anyone who's calling in from England, you might know where Brighton is, and I'm just in a little town just outside of Brighton. I came across hand-in-hand parenting while I was living in Australia just after my son was born, and I met a mum in a local playground. She invited me to my very first parent support group, and later when I moved back to England, she became my first ever listening partner. We did that through Skype. So what I found the transition from one child to two really challenging, and I found myself reacting in ways that I never thought I would when I was tired and stressed and unable to juggle the needs of both kids and my needs and lots of needs that I couldn't juggle very well. Listening partnerships that I was introduced to at that time became a really important and central tool that Hand in Hand had introduced into my life and into so many others. And this tool had a big impact on how I could choose to parent my children. So it helped me to be the kind of parent that I really wanted to be rather than responding in a knee-jerk way to behaviors that I didn't like. So it helped me kind of be able to choose again, and that was really a huge thing. When I moved back to England, when my son was around 1, he was born there, and then we moved back, and my daughter was then around 3, I found that there were no hand-in-hand teachers here in England, so I did an online certification training, and I became the first certified instructor here in England just about 3 years ago, and I'm very happy to say that since then, we now have 5 certified instructors here in England and a number of instructors in training. So if you are calling in from England tonight and you'd like to attend an in-person talk or a workshop or a class to complement what is available online, then just listen in at the end of the call and we'll announce some upcoming events in London in February and March. So Shaheen, we'd love for you to say hi, to introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Anna. So, hi, everyone. I'm Shaheen. I, too, have 2 children. My son is 10 and my daughter is 8. And I'm based in Hertfordshire, so in the Watford area, if anyone is familiar with that. My journey into hand-in-hand parenting began about 3.5 years ago, when my daughter went through a sudden bout of separation anxiety. So from being an outgoing, really confident child who hardly had any problems in nursery, she suddenly became really clingy and fearful. And it's really, really hard to see this change in my child, and even more so worrying given that she was due to start reception at primary school shortly after. So I did what anyone would do. I went to Dr. Google, and I started looking online for help. And I came across Patty Whitford's article on separation anxiety. So that led me to sign up to listen to a teleseminar like this one. And it really struck home. And just by doing the reading and the teleseminar, I began to try and utilize the tools at home from what I understood of it. Through the listening time, I began to realize that something had happened to scare her and that fear in her body was making it hard for her to think clearly and to realize that she was safe, even when I wasn't around. The tools really worked so well, almost like magic at the beginning especially, and I haven't looked back since. So I signed up to do a starter class to find out a little bit more, and I decided that I really wanted to share this with the community around me, so I went on to do the instructor certification training, and that brings me here with you all today. I'm really looking forward to sharing these tools, which have been so invaluable in my life and have helped my daughter work through her fears and become her normal, confident, outgoing self again today. It's also helped immensely with my son. In so many of the everyday things that happen, it's just been very comforting to know that no matter what happens, we have these tools to help us through. So, Anna, shall we just dive in and tell the good folks out there all about aggression?
Yes, yes, yep. So just to say, with the teleseminars, normally we deliver some ideas and show you, discuss how they've worked in our own families, and then we will open up the lines for questions at the end of the call. And as Shaheen said, if your question doesn't get answered on the call, please feel free to email us or find us on Facebook, and we'd be really, really happy to follow up with you, you know, off the air, so to speak. We do, both Shaheen and I, do need to get off the call around 10 p.m. our time for other scheduling, so we will keep the call to around an hour this evening. But please get in touch if you don't get your question answered at this point. Okay, so we'll get started now on the topic of aggression. And I think I'd like to just start by saying we've probably, I'm guessing, we've all been there. If you've got school-aged children, perhaps you've been the upset parent of a child that's been, you know, maybe shoved in the playground. Or if you've got younger children, perhaps maybe you've been the embarrassed, slightly guilty-feeling parent in a play group, in a toddler group, when your child has maybe just, you know, grabbed another child's hair or, you know, hit someone with a block or... We've all been there. I mean, maybe you haven't, but most of us have been there as parents. So despite all our best efforts, aggressive behaviours do come up for us as parents, either directed at our children or initiated by our children. This doesn't make us bad parents or our children bad kids, but it is something that we all want to address in ways that will make it stop. So before we can work well and effectively on what can be done to end this kind of behaviour, we need to understand what makes a child hit or bite or kick out. So if you'll bear with me at this time of night, if you are in the Northern Hemisphere, it's getting late, I just wanted to give a bit of background into what happens when a child does act out in an aggressive way. So aggressive behaviour and the anger that fuels it is like a hard crust that settles in over your child's other more tender feelings. The perspective that I learned from Hand in Hand that has greatly helped me and my family is that an aggressive child is a frightened child. So very, very often the behavior that's fueling aggression, even if it just seems sort of like a playful aggression, a nip or a little slap or a, you know, a pinch, say, often there's been a fear that has got set in. So when a child is stuck in an aggressive behavior, they're gripped by fears and upset, some of which may be from the past and not directly related to the current moment. And I'll explain more why it can often be something from the past. Aggression is the associated fight or flight response that leads to a child acting out impulsively. So you might have heard of this fight or flight. You know, when someone gets scared, they tend to go into, or even an animal, if an animal gets cornered, they tend to go into either fight or a flight response. So unless there's an immediate threat that's driving the aggression, the fear that most likely is fueling a kind of aggressive outburst is often from another incident from some time back in the child's past. Perhaps something that happened even when they were just an infant. So it could be a pre-verbal fear, which also helps explain why it comes out in hands and teeth and feet rather than in words. So that's something to sort of think about. If you've got a sort of a pre-verbal hurt that's happened, then it will come out in a different way than words. So Patty Whitfler, founder and program director of Hand in Hand Parenting, in her must-read Foundation Series booklet, Reaching for Your Angry Child, says, she puts it like this. She says, a child can't tell you, I feel afraid for my life, just like when I got stuck in the birth canal for 3 hours. She will simply show panic or outrage when another child crowds too close to her at a playgroup or something like that. She won't say, I feel scared, the same way I did when I, you know, really badly cut my head last year. But when you try to help her with a simple scraped knee, she'll kick you and demand that you leave her alone. So the fears that make a child act out in fight mode got stuck in the limbic brain. And the limbic brain is the seat of long-term memory. These fears often get stuck there some time back but didn't get processed at the time. The limbic brain stores up that emotion, and when an incident has the feel of the original upset, then the same strong emotion can flare up again. And in fact, if the incident has the feel of the original upset, but there's a kind of some element of safety, perhaps by your presence, that's when they can kind of come unfrozen from the, you know, from the real fear that they held and go into, if you like, a healthier fight response. So what is this limbic brain? Simply speaking, the brain can be thought of in three main parts. At the back, near the base of the skull, there's the brain stem, which you've probably heard of. It governs the automatic life processes, such as breathing, heartbeat, and body temperature, amongst other things. And then further forward in the brain is the limbic brain, and that's the seat of long-term memory. And it's what we think, what we know is the emotional and social center of the brain. It's the part that registers things like body language, the part that as an infant can assess without actually consciously thinking, it can assess whether their adult carer is connecting with them or not. And studies show that the limbic part of the brain is fully operational and online, so to speak, when a child is born. This can be compared to the prefrontal cortex, which is right at the front of the brain, where the limbic brain sits behind that prefrontal cortex. That prefrontal cortex is where impulse control, reasoning, short-term memory, and verbal skills happen. And this part of the brain takes around 20 years or so to fully mature after a child is born. I just want to check in with Shaheen. Are you there? Because the sound quality went very quiet.
I'm here, but I just switched it off so it's a bit clearer for you, Anna.
Ooh, okay. Thank you, Shaheen. I was just saying, so you've got this frontal cortex that takes around 20, as much as 23 years to fully develop in a human being. But that helps us understand the elasticity of a child and young person's developing brain power. And maybe it also helps us to understand the more instinctual and seemingly irrational responses of a child when flooded by feelings and acting from their limbic brain, because the limbic brain has been online and gathering impressions and reactions since your child was in utero. So it might help to remember when your child is acting out aggressively, their limbic brain has taken charge, so they can't reason or cooperate, they can't listen to your words, they're in a fight or flight mode. They're in survival mode. So you've probably had that experience where, you know, whatever you say really doesn't help with the kind of behavior that you're trying to stop. So here's an example of this response in my little boy. This goes back a couple of years. We had the Olympics here in England, as some of you might know, and my town was lucky enough to have the Olympic torch running through. A runner came through the town, and my son was really keen to get out and see the torch. So it was a really exciting time. We went out, we sat on the wall with his sister, and I bought them a little flag, and we waved it, and the runner went by in a matter of minutes after all the build-up. And then both my children really wanted to run behind the torchbearer. That was totally cool with me. We ran off, you know, after the torchbearer, and they sort of went ahead of me a little bit, and I caught up with them. And by this stage, Max, my son, had found somebody selling like these really cheap little medals, and he was really, really set on having one of these medals. Now, I'd already bought a flag, and I'd already spent my money, basically, and I said, no, Max, I'm not going to buy the medal. And he really kind of had a meltdown. My prefrontal cortex was thinking, this is completely disproportionate to what I've just said. I've basically just said a very reasonable thing. We're not buying that, you know, that piece of Olympic, you know, medal. And he just got really, really increasingly angry. And I was lucky my sister was with me with her little boy visiting from Australia. And so she could take my daughter off, and they kind of went off, you know, and chilled out somewhere, and I just stayed with Max, and he was really angry. He sort of pushed, and you know, he pushed himself into the corner of a sports shop and wasn't going to budge, and he started to try and kick. He was feeling very angry,
And I said to him, because I'd learned from Hand in Hand, that if you let a child hurt you when they're angry, they actually feel guilty, and that can sort of put them in a spiral of feeling bad about themselves. So I very gently held his feet and said, I can't let you hurt me. He's a 7-year, you know, he was a 7-year-old boy, and I'm, you know, an adult, so I could do it without force, but I could stop him from hurting me. I said, I can't let you hurt me, Max. And I repeated the limit, because I know from Hand in Hand that you don't need a lot of words in moments like that, because that's not where they're at. They're in their limbic brain. So I just stayed with my limit. I brought it very lovingly. I'm sorry, I can't get you that right now, and I can't let you hurt me. And he actually got more worked up and said, I want to bite you. And wow, I got to tell you, it was hard to just hold that, because it felt like, wow, this is so disproportionate. But I just held the limit with love and kindness in my own heart. And he eventually he started to sob. He really broke into sobs. And then he said, through the tears, eventually he said, Mom, I just want something that I can keep forever. And wow, I really, 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 really could hear him. We'd had a lot of changes in our lives. We'd moved house. He'd moved school. He'd lost a best friend. You know, his best friend was in the old school. My sister and her little boy were visiting from Australia, and they were about to return to Australia. He'd made a really strong connection with his cousin, with my nephew. And we had a lot of loss. You know, there were a lot of changes and separations that he'd been dealing with. And he kind of, it all bubbled up around this piece of, you know, cheap Olympic, merchandise. But it bubbled up because I was able to meet his aggressive acting out with love and with a loving limit, and with an understanding that he wasn't thinking. He wasn't able to think straight in that moment. And also with an understanding that there was probably something else going on underneath. And we don't need to psychologize. We don't need to understand what's going on underneath. And in that, I mean, the reason I'm telling you this story is because I found Max so clear when he did sort of say eventually, after a really good cry and a proper, you know, kick out and all that stuff, he could actually say what it was that was driving those feelings. I want something that I can hold, you know, that I can keep forever. And that evening when it finished up with him just a completely happy, gorgeous, connected kid again, very cooperative, very, very laid back, his usual, you know, friendly, high energy, happy self. And that evening I went out to a yoga class, and he came running downstairs, blew me lots of kisses. Bye, Mom. You know, see you soon. Love you. And I really felt like he'd actually worked off some piece around separation and fear of being separated. And he could then just really greet the next goodbye with great equilibrium. So this stuff really has a great knock-on effect. That's just a story from my own life. And I just want to finish up my section here by saying it's really understandable that some parents might worry that if you show warmth when your child is acting aggressively, that your child won't learn to respect or even to limit their behavior. And I think I want to just say that this very understandable concern is at base rooted in an idea that a child who's acting in an aggressive way is deliberately being bad. So it really helps to understand that the child who hits out feels pushed into an emotional corner so hard that they're in what Patty Whitfer calls an emotional emergency. So by just a seemingly small trigger, like, no, I'm not going to buy you that, you know, that Olympic medal, your child suddenly gets pushed into a fight for their life, or they're fighting against something that feels like it could completely overwhelm them. So trust that your child, once connected and back in their prefrontal cortex, wants to cooperate, wants to show compassion, wants to be at peace within themselves and with those around them. And I have seen this process work many, many times for my children. So thank you for your good attention to these ideas about what drives aggressive behavior. And now Shaheen is very kindly going to share more of how to work with your child to help them get over these difficult and trying behaviors. So thanks, Shaheen, and over to you.
Thank you, thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
Oh, did you hear a little bit of an echo, Anna? Oh, no, that's gone now. Okay, great.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah. Okay. So, like Hannah was saying, it really is so important to be aware of what is driving our children's behavior so that we can address the root of it. We are now shifting from just focusing on the external behavior and trying to modify that to looking deeper at the internal causes. And hopefully it's by doing this that we can really help our children in the long term and not just stop a certain behavior in the short term. So where can we start? There are some steps we can take to help a child who becomes aggressive. I'll share these and add an example from my own experience that I hope will help things become clearer and practical so you can implement it too. These steps, if done over time, will help allow the pent-up feelings causing the aggression to release, helping the connection between you and your child to become closer, and will help their play with other people, other children also. So what's the first thing? First and foremost, it is important to work on ourselves. When our children are aggressive, it can trigger a whole whirlwind of emotions in ourselves. We may get angered by it, we may get frustrated, we may just feel really sad, like, what have I done for my child to be acting like this? In such situations, it's really important to remember that the same way our children's brains get flooded by emotions and hamper their ability to think, the exact same thing happens to us. This is why we may sometimes say or do things we regret in the heat of the moment, because we're just not thinking. And this is why it's so, so important to take some time out to talk to someone who can listen to you for some time, without any advice, without any judgment, but just with unconditional love and support. It's at this time we can talk about how we feel about the aggression, the behavior, and what we feel like doing when it happens. So look out for the thoughts that make you laugh or make you cry, and stay with those. Allow yourself to release the pent-up feelings. Allow yourself to say all the things that you really want to say to them, like, how dare you use your hands again, or whatever it is that's just in your head that you just need to get out. Do this in listening time, so hopefully it won't come out in normal time. This is what we call listening time, and it's this listening work that will allow you then to stay calm and rational when the situation arises again, rather than react and be carried over by your own feelings. It's this that will then allow you to act on the next few suggestions that we are going to give you, rather than react towards your children in the same old patterns over and over again. So once you've begun this essential work on yourself, the next ideal step is then to observe your child. Try and see when the times are that aggressive behavior generally tends to happen. Is it when they're with a sibling alone in another room? Is it when there's too much going on and they feel overwhelmed? Does it happen at school, or at home, or both? Is it when a parent has been away a lot, at meetings or traveling? Allow yourself a few days to really observe your child, and this will give you a good idea as to what the triggers are for them. In other words, at what times are they losing their sense of connection, feeling some level of fear, and responding with physical aggression? This observation is really necessary for the next step, what we call friendly patrol. So many times we tend to think, oh, hopefully it won't happen this time, and we are very often proven wrong. We actually need to prepare ourselves now mentally that, you know what, it's going to happen, but I'm going to be ready to deal with it when it does. It's so much more helpful to be proactive than reactive. So what exactly does friendly patrol mean? Friendly patrol means that we stay close by when we think something might happen. So let's say a child is in a playgroup with other children, and it's usually a struggle over toys that you have observed leads to aggression. When the expected behavior begins, that's when you move in quickly and calmly, physically preventing that fist to land or those teeth from biting. Hold them back gently and set the limit, just as Anna was talking about a little bit earlier with her example with Max, the situation that arose. Once the aggression has been stopped, you reach out and you connect. So this is the time that you let your child know through your tone of voice, through your warm eye contact, through your soft but restricting touch, that it's safe enough for all those big feelings to come out. It's best not to say too much about why you're stopping them or why you're hitting or why their hitting is not okay, because remember, they can't reason with you right now. They're just not thinking. But you just want to let them know that you are fully there for them through phases like, I know you don't feel good. I'm right here, and I'll keep things safe for you. something like, it looks like things are really hard for you right now. Please tell me about it. Or reassure them, no one's mad at you. I just want to stay with you right now while you're upset. Chances are, this will allow all the feelings causing the aggression to surface. Your child may start crying or fighting against you, pushing to get through and getting angry at you for stopping at them. Don't worry. Keep remembering that they are off track and can't tell you how they feel. Keep sending them your warmth and attention as you let them continue their upset. You can do little things to make sure both of you are safe, like a soft hand on their wrist to stop them from grabbing your glasses, a gentle leg around their waist to stop the kicking. I've even heard that if they're biting and they've, you know, you haven't been able to stop them, leaning into it as well stops the hurt from, or stops the bite from being really hurtful until you manage to get free. When you sense the intensity of the tears or pushing dying down, this indicates that a good bulk of the feelings have been released. So that's when you reach out to them with a little smile or a funny face to see how they are. If they start laughing or come in for a hug, you've listened really well and you've helped them come through to the other side. If they get upset or start crying harder, they're letting you know that they still have work to do and you need to listen some more. So we call this tool Stay Listening, and it's a really good tool to help release feelings through crying, and that physical aspect of it as well is part of Stay Listening. There's also another really great tool called Play Listening. So in Play Listening, we're trying to help children release their feelings through another and often preferred way, which is that of laughter. In particular, we're dealing with aggression. There is something called roughhousing, and that's such a great way to help release those pent-up feelings through laughter. But it also helps tackle the physical tendencies that come with it. So what is roughhousing? Interestingly, roughhousing is officially defined as to engage in rowdy or uproarious play. So it's traditionally perceived quite negatively by parents who prevent it because they fear that it will actually lead to more aggression. So, for example, if I allow them to wrestle or punch a punching bag, then that's what they will do all the time and to all their friends. But time and time again, research has found that such roughhousing, especially done with someone close to them like a parent, leads to exactly the opposite. It allows children to release their physical energy in a safe way, and it promotes lots and lots of laughter, which allows the release of the feelings of fear, as described earlier. It promotes a sense of deep connection with the person that they're playing with. And there's a super, super book which I really recommend everyone, you know, to invest in. It's called The Art of Roughhousing, Good Old-Fashioned Horseplay, and Why Every Kid Needs It. It's by Dr. DeBenedict and Larry Cohen. And it not only goes into the benefits of roughhousing, but gives over 100 fun ideas of roughhousing to try at home. I know one thing we did was to invest in a pair of punching gloves and pads. So if at any time I feel like there's too much pent-up energy in the kids, which may spill over on aggressive behavior towards each other, I grab them and they can pummel the pads I hold up. This is always a lot of fun and leads to lots of laughter and eases up any tension. And things are always smoother after. I know when I do it, I feel great, so it's great for us too. These roughhousing games can be played at any time, but they're especially helpful in the moment of a potential aggressive outburst, where you move in close physically and playfully, and that can really work wonders. Patty Whipler, the founder of Hand in Hand Parenting, she calls this a vigorous snuggle. Keeping in mind what's going on in their brains, that they're not really thinking, that they're working from their limbic, which is flooded. When you do this sort of physical and playful interaction, you're doing what she calls a limbic tackle. So you can't get through to your child's prefrontal cortex because he can't feel his connection with anyone at that moment. They're not listening to reason. You then work straight towards the limbic system, the social center of his mind, and that's what can connect with each other. So by making playful, warm physical contact, you stop the behavior he's caught in, but you do it with nonverbal, generous, I want to be close to you gestures. So these are the signals that his limbic system is starved for. These are the signals that let him laugh or break into a big tantrum. These are the signals that one way or another will get his mind working again, aware that it's safe to love and let others love him. So playfulness has really helped us a lot. I found that the aggressive behavior that I needed to look out for and work on in our family was when the siblings would get at each other. And so I really first dug into my listening time and talked loads, and I still actually work on this a lot, but did a lot of work on how I felt about them arguing about each other, with each other, how it affected me when one was hitting and et cetera, et cetera. How I was scared for the future and how, you know, experiences in my past made me more worried about all the rest of it. When I had done this essential work on myself, and it's still ongoing, but it allowed me to be clearer going forward. So I then was able to do the next step, which is to observe. And when I really observed them, I noticed that actually any aggressive behavior started off as play. So it would be where they wanted to connect with each other, and they would, one would go bug the other to kind of connect with them. And what would happen is they would be chasing each other, yes, but actually there'd be a lot of laughter going on. But then, inevitably, one person would be a little bit too rough, and the other one would be reactive and hit, etc., and then it would kick off. So what I realized was that when they are playing with each other, when they are chasing around, that it's okay, it's good, they're laughing, they're connecting, but that I needed to be on friendly patrol at that moment and to intervene if necessary. And the opportunity comes very often, obviously. So there was one time, I very clearly remember this. It was a few months ago when we had to go to someone's house because there was a death in the family and we needed to go sit there. And so it wasn't easy for the kids. They had to be on their best behavior and, you know, it was a somber mood, etc. So when they came back, it was a little bit late. It was past their bedtime and I really just wanted them to go upstairs and sort themselves out and get into bed. But obviously things never go as planned. And as my daughter was going up the stairs, my son, obviously releasing some pent-up energy that he wasn't able to release earlier, and he's been doing a lot of rugby, so he went in and rugby tackled her, holding on to her legs. Now, I realized, okay, they're playing, but this could very well go with my daughter turning around and hitting him because she's younger. She doesn't have the words necessarily to be able to stop him. And I realized that that's where I needed to just intervene. And I quickly ran up, dumped my purse and everything down. I grabbed onto Hussein and very playfully said, "I got him, I got him. They have run, run for your life, I've got him." And I was trying to hold on to him and get her hands off him, but all in a very playful way. And that's when the laughter started. Everyone started giggling. I actually even managed to get his hands off her, and I said to her, "Run," but she was laughing too hard. She really didn't want to run away. She wanted to be right in the middle of the play. And I let it go on. We did a lot of this rugby tackling and just laughing and maneuvering and all the rest of it for a few good minutes. And after about 5 minutes, I said, "Okay, time's up. We really need to get sorted for bed now. So off you go upstairs." And because they'd laughed through it, they'd really connected well with each other and with me, and I wasn't mad. I could have gone in and said, "Hussein, why did you have to do that? It's late, blah, blah, blah." But I didn't do any of that. I went into the laughter, the limbic tackle. And when I did finally set the limit and say, "Right, time's up, guys, you really do have to go upstairs," they went up really quickly. They got everything, their brushing, etc., done in no time. And they went to bed so, so happily. So I, you know, although it was a little bit more investment of my time to go in and play rather than break it up and send them up, it really worked well in the long term as well, that I didn't have any of the hassles of making them brush and all the rest of it and all the agitation that often comes through, "Oh, he did this to me," et cetera, et cetera. And it was really a lovely bonding moment for all of us. And that's what happens when we connect with our children through play. It's such a strong way of keeping their sense of closeness alive, and that helps prevent off-track aggressive behavior as well. So it's brilliant preventative an intervention as well. To finish off, I'd just like to remind you that an aggressive child is a frightened child. Don't be fooled by the behavior that they've put on to protect themselves. Something has happened to frighten them, and they're managing as best as they can. They are waiting. They're waiting for us to move in close, ask them what the matter is, listen to them, and to tell them that they are good, even when they feel bad. So thank you, guys, and over to you, Anna.
Many thanks, Shaheen. Thank you for your playful and sensitive responses to behaviors that so many of us have experienced in our own families. Your children are so lucky to have you, Shaheen. We'd like to make time now for questions. So we're going to open up the line, and we have sort of 10 minutes for questions. So we'd love to hear from you.
So if you have, I see a hand up. I think it's Pamela from Wales.
Hello.
Hi, Pamela. Hiya.
I'm actually from America, but I live in Wales. My son is 3, and he's been very aggressive. I started a little play group, and it seemed like perhaps because I was running it, even though my husband was there, he was not getting my attention in this group of children as much. I still gave him attention, but I was kind of working as well. That he started really hitting children and saying, even before we got there, oh, I'm going to push him down and all this stuff. And I tried so many things to do, gentle approaches, we don't hit, gentle hands. And I guess sometimes it would get better. And I think I was still in the sleep deprivation fog to know what needed better. But the last time that I did it, it was so bad that I just ended, I stopped it. I stopped running it because I thought, this isn't working for him. And my husband went back to work. My husband was unemployed for a year, went back to work. And we've been trying different things, but even so it seemed to accelerate now that my husband went back to work and I'm in sort of a training. I go away once a month, so I think that's exasperated it. But my main question was, there's a lot of question from my family about it, my mother-in-law, different people, and, you know, they're saying, oh, you have to let him know that you're unhappy about what he's doing, and people suggested timeouts and giving consequences, and, oh, he's just going to act out more just to get attention if you're too gentle or kind to him. And I just wanted to see if you wouldn't mind responding to, you know, these sort of other approaches of time out, consequences, and acting out to get this attention, you know, like that it's a bad thing and all.
Shaheen, do you want to, have you got a response straight away or should I?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really, really good question, and it's very hard as well when our society thinks a bit differently. The traditional views are very deep rooted, and when we feel in our hearts that this is not the right way for us, but sometimes we don't have the answers to give. So the problem with timeouts and consequences and all the rest of it is that what you're doing is you're treating the behavior. And even with those sort of consequences, you often don't have the results that you need. So, I mean, if we think about it, we're sending very mixed messages to the child when we shout, or, you know, we shout at them when they shout, or, you know, we send them away when actually we haven't addressed what kind of factors are driving that behavior. So now we need to take a step further and see, okay, what is going on to make them have that need to hit? And the one thing to remember is that when they have that aggressive behavior, as Anna said, there is some sort of fear there. So now what you're trying to do is you're really trying to get to that release. One thing, and you've mentioned that, you know, dad's gone back to work, you have training, et cetera, going on in the playgroup. There was, your attention wasn't completely focused on him. So there is actually another tool that we often recommend, and that's called special time. Special time allows their love cup as such to be filled very, very quickly. So if we think of each of us having like a love tank or a love cup, special time allows that love and attention that you have for your child to really be directed at him. And at this time, you know, we tend to say between 5 and 20 minutes, you give him your undivided attention. You don't check your phone, don't answer the phone at this time. Sometimes we play with our children, but then we stop and quickly check on the dinner or give the dinner a stir and stuff. So often the time that we do spend with our kids isn't pure quality time. Whereas in special time, You actually have a timer in your head and in your heart. You tell yourself, I am going to focus on my child for this amount of time. And at that time, you're really enthusiastic. You're, you know, focused on them. You're pouring your love out to them. And the key thing here is also to do what they need or what they decide to do. So you tell your child, you tell your son, for example, you know, I have 10 minutes just for you, whatever you want to do. And you don't lead at all. And they take the lead, and sometimes, you know, they may look at you and say, well, then I want to have that chocolate, or I want to jump in the bed. And you go, yeah, let's do it. You know, you allow them to break all the normal rules and do what really they have been wanting to do. And what this really does is sends the message to your child that you love them, you're there for them. And it really connects, it's like that strong, good quality dose of connection. Often people find that after special time, not only is their child more loving and verbally and physically towards their parents, but they're also much more content to go do their own thing, much more calmer in themselves. They don't have that need to hit out. The other thing that potentially can happen after special time is a release of tears. So when the timer goes, your son may very well, because of the safety that's built up during this time, burst into tears. And say, no, I don't want special time to end. And this may, again, lead to that aggressive behavior directed at you. And that's the time where you then get in and stay, listen. You've done all the right things. In fact, that burst of tears and tantrum or whatever is really good. It's that healthy release of fear that's coming out because of the safety you've built. What you need to do then is to stay, listen. And hopefully, after such stay, listening sessions, you might hopefully be able to see a change in your child. Anna, do you have anything to add to that as well?
Yeah, I love the suggestion of special time, because I think if you're getting feedback from your family around, you know, you're just going to sort of reward his bad behavior and it will increase, you kind of want to do something proactive in your own home that will allow you to see for yourself that once you start to kind of give your warm, loving attention, you won't really need, your child won't need to do quite, you know, won't need the negative attention to get your attention, you know. And yeah. One thing I really want to say for everyone who's listening is that you get to be the experts in your own home. You know, we've tried these things, we've used these listening tools, and we found them to work for us in our homes. You just get to give it a try for yourself. And in your question, I hear that, you know, you would like to know whether timeouts or consequences, et cetera, are going to be the right route. You're really going to have to, I would really recommend trying to use these listening tools. The other listening tool that's so helpful with kind of off-track behavior is play listening, as Shaheen was talking about. If you can find a playful way to so your child was obviously feeling, you know, jealous about you being the playgroup leader. You sound like such a wonderful mom that you set that up, you know, in your community, and you ran a playgroup for other kids, and you must have been giving a whole lot of yourself. And I really just want to, you know, I hope you patted yourself on the back, because that's a great thing to do. And I'm just thinking about ways that you could play with your child's feeling of, you know, being left out or mum's attention isn't with me. I don't know. I'm just thinking something. I mean, in the past, I've done things like just had, you know, all the teddy bears kind of having the same kind of fight that you were experiencing with your kids. So, you know, one teddy saying to, you know, to the other teddy what your son was saying to you in playgroup. Or the other thing is just you be the one who wants him. So we play a game. There's a game that Hand in Hand Parenting teaches it, which is like, I've got 1,000 hugs for you. And you basically, you are the one who kind of wants his attention. And you kind of come in trying to get him, you know, trying to give him a hug. And he gets to be the more powerful one. And hopefully you'll get some laughter going and you can both have a good time sort of playing with the tension of wanting all of you. And he can't have all of you all of the time.
Yeah, I think the timeout and consequences just never felt right to me. They just felt like adults wanting to just take the easy way out, kind of, and just sort of, I don't know, it just didn't sit well with me. So that's why, obviously, I'm kind of researching into this because, well, I've sort of been following this, but not really knowing all the language and the tools exactly, it's getting better.
It's a real problem of the philosophy. It's really up. It's just for you to give it to try these different approaches. I just would say about timeouts. Timeouts do have a time limit because when your child is no longer small enough for you to physically send away to another space, like when they're a teenager, for example, that sort of power imbalance that you may have introduced when you're physically bigger than them. Will start to probably get played out with them trying to take the power from you, if you see what I mean. So I always think parenting is a long journey. And, you know, what you do in the short term will sort of have ramifications, will definitely have ramifications as they get older. So I think it's good to think about the long term when you're using power over your child to get them to do what you want them to do. But this, I just want to add, this is not a permissive parent. Hand-in-hand parenting does not advocate, you know, permissive sort of approaches. It's definitely an authoritative approach rather than an authoritarian. So it's not saying you can't have limits or boundaries, or it's definitely not saying that. It's just about how you bring those limits. And you can bring them playfully, and you can bring them with love, and you can, you know, bring them with a willingness to listen to how hard it is on the other side when your child doesn't get what he wants. I think we better see if there's anyone else out there with a question, but we'd be really happy, Shaheen and I, to be in touch with you. You know, if you want to email, we can talk more. But thank you so much. Such a helpful discussion from your question. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pamela. Just if you have a question, do press *2 to raise your hand. I don't see any other hands at the moment. So, Pamela, I just wanted to also add one thing where if you want to know more about the effects of rewards and consequences and timeout and things like that, a book I really always recommend is Unconditional Parenting, and it's by Alfie Kahn. And it will really give you a good understanding, a deep understanding of why they don't work, because they just modify behavior. So if you want to look that up, that would be super. Thanks, Pamela.
I think it's like, I don't know if you've heard of Wilhelm Reich, but he is all about, you know, sort of body therapy, and body work is such a clear need when a child is frustrated that they need to release their pent-up tension, just like we do, and they don't have that opportunity. So that's why this, I think, is so brilliant, and I'm just really glad I found out about you. Thank you for having this, anyway.
Thank you. Thanks, Pamela. Yeah, I see another question by Shakib from San Diego. I'm just going to unmute you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, hi. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you? So I have been doing some of the suggestions with the stay listening and special time. My son has the very severe receptive language delay, and but he is, you know, he knows and understands a lot at the same time, and he's very perceptive. But you know, language is a bit of an issue, and I know that this is supposed to help with children who have delays anyway. But one of the things I struggle with is when we do special time, he prefers, of course, to do roughhousing. And there's a part where he asks me to get on my feet while I lay down on my back, and I lift him up in the air. And he, when he goes up, he kicks so hard that he wants to fall down. That he wants to not only just fall down, but hopefully fall down on me, and as he's going down, he hits me. And my son has never been the child who was aggressive or who was hit. But ever since he had a sister 5 months ago, he's become very aggressive towards his family. And at that time, I get very, very upset, and I'm actually too upset to continue this special time, because he has either pulled my hair really hard or he has hit me. And the other day, he's learned how to headbang me in the face or in the head because his heels close to his sister kissing her. And, you know, she's still kind of wobbly in her head, so she hit her head on his. So now he has learned that that's also another way to hurt someone. what can you do then to manage yourself? And, you know, you have like, what, 20 minutes and just stay calm at the same time. You can continue the rest of the special. Should you continue or should you just do it another time?
Yeah, it's really important that you don't let him hurt you, because he will actually end up feeling, you know, guilty, and you'll just sort of end up with a kid who is stuck in a bit of a spiral. So you are physically bigger than him, so very gently you need to just protect yourself from. And I know it's not easy. I really understand if you're playing and suddenly you get a headbutt. But if, as Shaheen was saying earlier, one of the really good things to do is to start observing when his aggressive, you know, behavior might come out, so that you're doing something called a friendly patrol, you know, so that you think, oh yeah, when we do the play wrestling, I usually get a kick or a headbutt. And you just be really, be prepared for that, so that you can kind of protect yourself before
okay.
he actually lands a punch or a kick or something. I would say if you feel you're able to do that, it would be terrific if you can keep playing and, you know, and wrestling, because it will be a really good way, as we were talking about, like a sort of limbic tackle, you know, so that he can start to feel your connection and feel your love for him. I would say that sibling rivalry is a huge thing in any child's life. I remember Patty Whitzler, who's the founder of this, of Hand in Hand, saying it's a little bit like your husband coming home and saying, you know, hey, I really love you, darling, but I've met someone else and I want them to sleep in our bed. You know, it's like, it's a huge adjustment for any child. And when I had my daughter, she was 2 when my son was born, and that's quite a close, you know, age gap. And that's what got me into this approach, because I started to realize that she had some really big feelings about him and wanted to sort of, you know, whack him on the head, or she really didn't want to be, you know, second best. She wanted to be second best, you know. So one thing I'd really recommend for you right now, if you can, and I can imagine you've got your hands full with a new baby and a little boy who's, you know, having strong, strong feelings, but if you can find a listening partner, if you can find someone else who can really listen to your feelings of probably your, I'm guessing you feel angry when he's like that, because, you know, especially when we've got a new baby in the house, you just, all your instincts come out to protect the baby. You don't want to see
And I have, I'm sure you've heard about Dr. Laura Markham. I've read her book.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this way of parenting. And I am a pretty calm person, but ever since I had my daughter, when my son attacked her,
yeah.
and sometimes it's very sneaky, it is very,
yeah.
very hard for me to stay in control and not get in the loop of the anger that he is in. And the hardest part is, they have a swing and he leans over her and he kisses her really forcefully. But then when I try to peel him away slowly, or I put gently my hand between, and then I come in between them, he gets very upset. And as he's going away, he slaps her or he will pinch her. It's as if he wants to do one more harm just before he's completely far away, too far.
That makes me very upset. I can really empathize with those feelings of, you know, something, there's something quite sort of instinctive about wanting to protect the baby, you know, and so it would be so helpful for you if you could find an adult who could really listen to your feelings of sort of rage or, you know, all those stuff, so that you then have a bit more space when you're around your son. And I don't know if you've tried any of the play listening ideas, but you can really turn that stuff around. You know, you can sort of play games about, that's not how you kiss a baby, this is how you kiss a baby. And you can sort of show a really gentle little butterfly kiss, or, you know, and see if you can get him sort of showing you the feelings without, you know, obviously without hurting his little sibling. Shaheen, is there something you wanted to add to that?
The only thing I'd really add is, again, emphasize the importance of listening time and taking some time out to work on your own feelings of frustration or fear that's coming up, because that's what's going to allow you to stay calm when that he does act aggressively towards the baby or towards you. And the other thing is, it's very common for these aggressive behaviors to come out in special time or even in the midst of roughhousing, for example, because that tool creates such a sense of safety for the child. So very commonly, for example, if you are even playing at roughhousing, if things seem relatively playful, you know, there could be wrestling going on the bed or some sort of game, at some point you may see a change come over their face and they'll get a very serious, stern look. And that's when they'll really start with the aggressive behavior. And at that point, usually is when parents say, okay, this has gone too far, now you're really hitting, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, it's that place where the true feelings are being released. And if you can stay calm through that, either by grabbing a pillow to keep yourself safe and give them that pillow or punching bag or something else to really get their pent-up feelings and, you know, the fight or flight has kicked in at that point. So if you allow them to actually fight it through while keeping yourself and them safe, then that's when you're going to see, hopefully, the biggest changes come out. So often, you know, we misconstrue it and we think, oh, gosh, they're, you know, this is, like, really scary now. They're actually being very hurtful and they're meaning it. But it's actually very normal. And if we can see it through, we can really help our children.
Thank you.
We've actually come up to time, so we're going to have to wind it up there. But if you have got a question, you could definitely be in touch with us on Facebook or through our email. So I just wanted to conclude by saying there are lots of resources out there on the Hand in Hand website. There's articles and podcasts. There's membership to a free Yahoo discussion group. There's access to a free blog. There's self-guided classes with topics ranging from helping children with aggression to sleep to sibling rivalry. There are self-guided classes, so you can just watch videos and read booklets at your own pace. They come with an optional consult time with experienced instructors. And there's also, of course, the six-week-long starter classes, which are a really wonderful introduction to parenting by connection. It's the best way to learn about the approach in the supportive environment of an instructor-led group with a few other parents. And Shaheen and I, we both have starter classes coming up. I have one on Thursday the 25th of February, and that's at 8:30 p.m. UK time. And I have an earlier class at 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. UK time, and that's for parents of teens and preteens. Today, I ought to just plug this. Today is the last day of the Hand in Hand February sale, where you get a £50 discount or a $75 discount on the usual price of the class. So I would encourage you, if you were thinking of doing a starter class, to go onto the website and register if you want that discount. And then once you are registered, you don't have to decide right away what core group you want to be in. You can just sort of have access to the materials from there. Shaheen, is there anything else you'd like to mention? Actually, I should mention we have a talk coming up in London on March the 2nd. That's at 7:45 till 9 p.m. at the Helios Centre near King's Cross. Is there anything else, Shaheen, that you'd like to mention before we say goodbye?
So my next online class begins Tuesday the 23rd of Feb, and that's at 11 a.m. So we'll meet at 11 on Tuesday morning for 6 weeks.
UK and time. Yeah.
UK time. Yeah, that's right. And Anna, did you want to give the – so if anyone wants to register for the free talk that Anna and I are running, and that's on handling children's emotional moments, you can just send Anna an email on annacole.uk@gmail.com. And there's more information about that on the website. There is also hopefully a day's workshop coming up after that. So details about that will be listed on the website very soon. If you look out for that one too. That's all from me. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And I really hope and pray that this has been helpful and sending you lots and lots of warmth and just really strong thoughts. It's so great to see all these parents so willing to put in the hard work to help their children work through their stuff, and we really appreciate all that. Thank you.
Yeah. We can start at the bottom up to make a more peaceful world. Thank you for everyone for tuning in today and all the really good work you're doing as parents.
Take care. Thanks very much.
Bye. Thank
Bye.
You.